Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hi, I'm Giancarlo Esposito, and I'm here to introduce you to my new series, Parrish. My character, Gray Parrish, was a getaway driver.
I'm retired from life, you know that.
He's in a world over his head.
Tell me about this driver job.
And he's asked to start to figure things out.
I did what you told me to.
He will try to do what's right and seek justice.
Parrish, all new, Sundays at 9 on AMC and stream on AMC+.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Inside the Studio on iHeartRadio. My name's Jordan Runtog, but enough about me. My guest today is the best-selling instrumentalist of all time and arguably the most famous jazz musician alive. Both of these points elicit extremely strong emotions in people. To many, his music inspires peace, serenity, and relaxation. His 1994 Christmas album Miracles marks the start of the holiday season in my house. But to a vocal minority, his music inspires jokes and occasionally antipathy. Still, he's good-natured, confident, and wildly successful enough to be unperturbed by the ribbing. Besides, he's probably far too busy to care. Following the death of James Brown, the man born Kenneth Bruce Gorelick just might be the hardest-working man in show business. He approaches his musical craft with the focus and clear-eyed determination of an athlete in training. He's been training for over half a century. He puts in 3 to 4 hours of practice each day to ensure that his playing remains up to his exceedingly high standards. His hard efforts have paid off on a new album entitled New Standards, a collection of original material designed to evoke the timeless spirit of jazz classics. He's also the subject of a new documentary by filmmaker Penny Lane called, appropriately enough, Listening to Kenny G. Premiering December 3rd on HBO, the film explores his artistic journey, superhuman work ethic, and his somewhat polarizing reputation as a musical figure. It also showcases his host of other non-musical talents, including baking, flying, and golf. And as you're about to find out, he's also really good at being interviewed. It's my pleasure to welcome Mr. Kenny G. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. And maybe throw on a Kenny G album in the background. Why not? I wanted to start with the upcoming HBO documentary, Listening to Kenny G. It's such a fascinating premise because it's not just a biography, it also documents your relationship with fans and with your critics. How did this begin for you? How did you first link up with Penny Lane, who, in addition to being very talented, has an awesome name?
She has an awesome name, definitely. Well, you know, I got the call from... who did I get the call from, actually? It was from my attorney, who said he was talking to this guy, Bill Singer, at Ringer Films, that they may want to do some sort of an HBO doc on me. And so I just basically said, sure, I'm interested. And I got together with Penny, who was also contacted by them. And she, what, here's what happened. They contacted Penny and said, would you want to do a documentary on a musical person? And she came back and had the idea to do it about me. So that's really where it came from.
And what was the experience like for you making this film? I mean, I'm thinking back to the old This Is Your Life programs. I mean, did you learn anything about yourself in the process?
Well, you know, no. I mean, I pretty much know everything that I said about myself, but it was fun. It was actually really fun. Penny made it easy. It was a lot of, you know, self-reflection. It was a lot of thoughtfulness, good questions. And also I got a chance to see my old high school band teacher, which was awesome because I hadn't seen him in 20 plus years.
Oh, that's incredible. There's a very moving part of the film when he was saying that you found your soul when you played I think it was a 10-minute note on stage. I mean, is that a real crucial turning point in your life? Do you remember that moment very well?
Well, I think he remembers it more than I remember that particular moment. I think I was just playing my heart out and doing my thing. And I think maybe for him, he might have looked at me. You know, a teacher might look at a student one day and go, you know, he's not really a student anymore. you know, and maybe that was his moment like that. But for me, it was just a great camaraderie with him. And he was super encouraging. So he was a big part of me continuing to play because he always made me feel like I was a pro.
Oh, well, I mean, that's... When you're first starting out on any instrument, I mean, you need to feel like you're actually going somewhere. And that's a crucial thing, I think, teachers, to give them the sense of confidence that, you know, you're getting somewhere. That's a beautiful gift.
I agree. And then he gave that to me and I took it and ran.
Is it true you still use the same saxophone?
Yeah. Same one. Same exact one. Yeah.
I mean, this is my Indiana Jones brain is kicking in. I mean, I feel like that belongs in a museum. I mean, do you have it in a vault? Like, wow, that's unbelievable. That's still, I mean, aside from Paul McCartney's Hofner, I can't think of a more, you know, iconic instrument that's linked to somebody. Wow.
It's the same one I use all every gig I play, everything I record, all with the same sax.
Wow, that is incredible.
Yeah, cool.
Oh man. I mean, I love the film shows off your sense of humor, and I really love and admire the way that you handle your critics because it doesn't impact your love of playing one iota. And I just think that is the coolest thing. There was an interview you gave recently, I think it was with the Daily Beast, where you're actually complimenting the writing of a critical review, which I just think is like Buddha level equanimity and compassion there. And I just think it's so important to put this out there because, you know, there are so many people who talk themselves out of pursuing any creative avenue for fear of, you know, critics, what people might say, whatever. And I just think, you know, it's so important for someone like you to I just want to know, how did you achieve that level of composure and self-assurance? I just think that's like more people should see that and just, you know, do their thing.
Well, thank you. You know, I do believe that's a really good message because you're right. A lot of people stop the whole process because they are criticized or they're a fear of being criticized. And it stops a lot of really great ideas from getting farther along. Great ideas, great music, whatever you want to say. But, you know, I've always had the feeling inside of me that when I play my sax, I just know what I want it to sound like. And if I accomplish that, whatever anybody says really doesn't mean anything to me because fortunately for me, when I've done that, I've gotten a lot of feedback, positive, around the world by millions and millions of people. So when that happens, that's really good feedback for trusting yourself. I mean, Look, if I did that and everybody hated everything I did, it would be a lot harder maybe to have that confidence that I still want to do what I'm doing. But I probably would still have it because when I'm in my studio right now, and when I come out of the studio with some piece of music recorded that I think is good, that's it, man. That's just it goes out there, and whatever happens, I still love it.
Whenever I talk to people who are blessed with the ability to write music, I'm so curious of what compels them to do it. Is it a desire to connect with other people, or is it to just get something out of yourself? If you were on a desert island, would you, you know, be playing and just as much?
I would be playing just as much. Yeah. For me, it comes from inside. Yeah. What is the desire to write a piece of music? It's really one of those things. It's It's almost like if you were if you opened a box and then you go, okay, well, I wonder what's inside. You're just kind of curious. So that's kind of what it is. I'm curious. How I hear a couple of notes and I go, well, I'm really curious about these notes. Can these notes turn into a beautiful melody the way that I think they can? And so for me, it's all about the discovery and the challenge of trying to make it work and the mystery of whether it will work or not. And then when you play it back, when I play it back and I listen, I'm almost like a third person listening and going, that's a really beautiful piece of music without it being me stroking my own ego. And that's something that I think it may be unique, but that's how I do it. I'm really able to separate myself from myself when I listen back.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you more about your composition process. New Standards is originals. Do you hear the tune in your head and put it down, or do you solo and maybe pick a phrase or two that you think, oh, that's really beautiful, I'm going to develop that a little more? Or is it a combination?
It's a lot of factors. It's not any one thing. Sometimes I have a melody that's just, I've got it in my head and I know it's going to be right. And then I just need to find the chords that go along with that melody. Sometimes I'm just playing with a keyboard player and we're just noodling and then he plays a chord and I go, ooh, play that chord again. And then I stop. Oh, I'm playing. Okay, from there. And then we just start from there. And it's a lot of ways. It could just be humming something and I just hear something. Could just be some music that I hear that go, oh, I'd like to play something like that. I hear a certain chord changes. I'm going to come up with something that goes along with something like that. And so I wish there was only one way and I wish I could just bottle it and then it would be a lot easier.
I mean, this is a question that's going to give away the fact that I, as much as I love music and my job allows me to speak to fantastically talented people like you who can write, I've never written a song in my life. I play a number of instruments. I can't do it. I don't know if it's in my head or just some. I guess the question is being a musician or a composer, I should say, is that something that you're born with or can you learn to do it?
Oh, I think you can absolutely learn to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty easy. But here's how I would advise anybody that has trouble doing it or just doesn't understand the process. Okay, if some of us are born with that those melodies inside of us, some of us are. But if you're not, it's really easy. Find songs that you like. Figure out how they were composed. Like, get the chord changes, play them, and then just kind of get used to that. And then say, okay, I want to write something like that. So change the chords, change everything, but try to find some similarities where it's not too similar, because you obviously don't want to have any copyright infringement. But that's how you do it. You kind of emulate. And then you'll find your own voice because you may go, wow, I really like this, but I wish it would go here. And then you find that you're creating a brand new song.
Was there a turning point for you when you went from being somebody who was, I'll use the phrase, an apprentice musician to really knowing that you discovered your own voice and your own sound?
I think it was probably when I did my album Duotones in 86 was when... What happened was, okay, this 86 is like 35 years ago. The technology just came out with what we would call a synthesizer. Now it's just like, well, whatever. That's like old school. Like now we're talking about all these, computer-based things and you can trigger sounds with the keys on your laptop. But we're just talking about like a piano-looking device that had sounds in it. It wasn't a piano, it was a synthesizer, electronic. You could play something on it and then hit a button and it would play back what you played. That was innovative back then. It's not innovative now. That's like kindergarten stuff. But back then. So what happened was that I got my hands on one of these things and since I'm not a piano player, I can noodle. So then I started noodling and then you can fix notes. So I would fix, I go, hey, I just created a piano track that I've always wanted to play on that I could never explain to somebody. And it didn't sound right on a piano, but it sounded right on the synthesizer. A sequencer. That's a sequencer. So I played this thing and then I hit my button and it's like, whoa, I really like this backing track that I just made. And I make a melody to it. And that's when I found my voice.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power.
So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
In the film, there's a lot of attention paid to your practice regimen, which is formidable. 3 hours a day for approximately 50 years, something like that?
Yeah, about, yeah.
I mean, by Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours rule, you're a master five times over. And as a layperson, I would imagine that there must be very little for you left to learn. I mean, you're Kenny G. Why do you practice? Is it to keep limber, or are you still discovering and finding new things?
Well, the analogy I would use would be somebody like, like a great golfer. Let's take Tiger Woods. So why would Tiger Woods ever have to go to the driving range? Doesn't he have it? I mean, doesn't he have it?
Good point.
You know, why would anybody go practice? Because practice is what maintains your skill level at something that you may be, let's say you are a master at it. Although I'm not saying I'm a master at the sax. I'm trying to master the sax. And I would say that anybody that's playing an instrument or golf or any of those things, we all say our goal is to keep trying to master something that can never be mastered. So it's just the quest to keep learning. I mean, I practiced this morning. I did my 3 hours already. And, you know, I was working on trying to use my phrasing in a different way than I've done in the past, and challenging because I'm so used to doing things a certain way. So I thought, let me try to do things a different way here. And so I'm working on that. I figured, you know, maybe a couple more years of doing that and I'll probably be pretty good at that particular little thing. And then I'll be another couple of years for something else. And then I'll be in my 90s and I'll just keep doing the same thing.
I mean, that is an inspiration. I mean, you really are. I mean, you go through this in the film as well. I mean, you're a pilot, you're a golfer, you're a baker. I mean, they're all these things that you do that you commit 1,000% to, which is really, you know, the way you should do anything. Is there anything that you're sort of at the beginning of your journey on, hobbies wise or, you know, interest wise that you just started to learn that you're first now getting into?
Yeah, I'm trying to learn how to speak French.
Really?
I already know how that's going to be. I already know how much that's going to take. And I am not putting in the right kind of time. I just don't have it. So I'm trying to figure out how I might be able to sneak in the right amount of time. And I just don't know how to do that yet because my life is pretty full. I mean, I do my practicing. I got my exercising I like to do. I still have to maintain my skill level as a pilot. Obviously, we want that because that's your life depends on
crucial.
That. I love golf, so I want to dedicate some time to golf. I have a family, you know, I have people in my life that I want to spend time with. And there's also, I'd like to do things like nothing, like sit around and just contemplate things and spend time just being instead of doing. So I have all those things, but I still want to speak French. So I'm trying to figure out how to make that happen. I'm not sure if it's going to happen. And I may be one of the things that I might have to just go, I'm going to be satisfied with a less than stellar skill level at that. But maybe if I have just a working French vocabulary and dialogue, maybe I'll be happy with it. I'm not sure I will be, because I'm not wired to be happy with anything that's not really great.
I mean, judging from your track record, I have a funny feeling you'll be fluent very, very shortly. What's that great, the painter Bob Ross, the guy on PBS, and he'd always say, I hope you're plagued with dissatisfaction, because that'll keep you coming back and keep you, wanting to keep on painting another and another. And it sounds counterintuitive. It almost sounds negative when you hear it, but I think of that a lot. And, hearing what you just said, it makes me think of you being plagued with dissatisfaction, but in a good way, to keep moving forward.
Yeah, it's almost like that movie, Whiplash. I don't know if you saw the movie Whiplash.
Yes.
By the way, I never had a teacher like that. Not like that. He was awful. But his whole thing was he never wanted to tell somebody good job. I remember him saying, because he thought those were the worst two words you could ever tell somebody, good job, because he felt like if you did that, then it would stop them from trying harder to get better. I completely don't agree with that. I do not agree with it. I think you can say good job. And still, if a person is really interested in becoming better and better just because somebody's, I hear it all the time, how, hey, that was a great show. Well, in my mind, I know that I missed a note that I wanted to hit the way I wanted to hit it or blah, blah, blah. But I don't mind hearing good job. I appreciate that. And that doesn't take any motivation away from me to try harder to be better the next night at my next gig, no matter, even if I think, hey, that was a really good gig. Great. But I'm still motivated to do even better tomorrow. I disagree with that, but I get the philosophy of being dissatisfied does get you always trying to be better, but hopefully you're not beating yourself up during the process.
Right. That's a delicate balance. I mean, speaking of moving forward, your new album, tell me a little bit about the theme behind it. It sounds like it's steeped in, old masters like Coltrane and Miles Davis. Like, tell me a little more about the thinking behind the record.
Well, I love the ballads of those of the era of those jazz greats. So we're talking about the 50s and 60s. So you've got your Miles Davis and John Coltrane. Those are pretty household names. I think even people that aren't into jazz kind of know those names. But there's Stan Getz and there's Paul Desmond and there's Cannonball Adderley and Sonny Rollins. Those names are probably not so upfront with people. But I love all those ballads. And the thing I love about those ballads is that they're not simple. They're complicated. And I say complicated in the sense that the composition are chords, like they're complicated jazz chords.
Yeah.
And it gives the player a chance to nuance through the solo section of a song and really kind of find a way to bring all those complicated chords together. And so I wanted to do that, but I also wanted the melodies to be my melodies. So I didn't want to just go ahead and play the old standards. So I wanted to write new songs in that style, but make them the melodies that sing to my heart. And that's what I did. So that's why it's called New Standards, because they're not the old standards. They're new, brand new songs. And I'm hoping that they would be considered standards at some point because of the way that they're constructed.
I mean, that's what I love about those tracks. I mean, they're complicated when you sit down to try and play them, but they don't sound that way. They cover their tracks. They cover the joins and make it seem so seamless and make it seem so easy. What is for you? I mean, the title is so great because to me, the thing that makes a standard really is just the passage of time. And so the idea of a new standard is it's like jumbo shrimp. It's almost counterintuitive. What is it to you that makes, and maybe this is a eye of the beholder type question, what is it that makes a timeless melody to you?
Well, that's a good question. And that's what I try to do with every song that I record. It's a melody that makes sense and is played played in just the right way, that the emotion of the melody there, it's not a, it's not like a one-time take. See, that's why I love doing it in my studio, because I have a chance to tweak things. Because you're talking about a timeless melody. You're not talking about, hey, on Tuesday night, that was a good take. Okay, that was a good take on Tuesday night, but is that the take that's going to be around for 50 years? I mean, maybe, but in a perfect world, I think even the jazz greats, now this is very presumptuous, but even some of the beautiful ballads of the 50s and 60s, if the jazz greats had the technology that we have today, and they had the knowledge of how to do it, which is what I do, I have in my studio, I know how to use all this gear. So I can take a melody and go, you know, I love it, but there's three notes I don't like. I can fix those three notes and make them exactly the way I want. They'll fit in seamlessly. Would the jazz greats go back and tweak some of their performances just because they had the chance to? I would say that maybe some of them would, maybe some of them wouldn't. But for me, it's about putting out a masterpiece that I can listen to forever and know that there's, it's just, I don't know how to say it in words. It's like, I like my Christmas album, you know, that's how I set about to do Miracles, and it was 1994. And so we're going to do an arrangement of White Christmas. It's been done a million times. Okay. Why is my arrangement going to be something that's going to stand the test of time? Because it's going to be a classic arrangement. It's not going to have any funny business in it, in the sense that it's going to be so nuanced that it would only be applicable for the 90s. No, this is going to be something that you could listen to if you were in the 1800s or now in 2000, you know, 30. Okay, what's that melody? So I got to play it in just the right way, right nuances. And that's kind of what I did with New Standards. Same intention.
It's really fascinating how in the last 180 years or so, the meaning of a song went from being a set of notes and chords that was sort of living and evolving depending on who was playing it, to the record is the song. I mean, you know, this is a silly example, but something like Sweet Home Alabama by Lynyrd Skynyrd, when they say turn it up at the beginning, they have to say that in concert now, because for most listeners, that's become part of the song. The accidents are part of the song. Every little, you know, note bend in the solo, it's become about that recording and not sort of the song as a living, breathing standard, I guess, is probably the term. It's interesting to see that evolution over the century, or 20th century, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a delicate balance when you play live, because you do want to emulate what you've recorded because people are used to it, but then hopefully you give it something special in the live performance. So we do our best. I mean, I don't play every single note exactly the same as I did on the recording during a live performance. I get close enough, but then when I'm playing live, there's the nuances that just make it special for that Tuesday night. For the recording, I leave it right where it is. Live performance, I'm probably going to throw in a few more fancier things that would be exciting for that moment, but maybe not something I want to hear every single time I hear the song.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
If you use paper, you're a human. But if you choose paper, you're a papertarian. Someone who lives a paper-based lifestyle because it has a positive impact on the planet. and also because it's the easiest choice you'll make all day. Seriously, it's as easy as reaching for boxed instead of bottled water. It's as easy as opting for beauty products that come in paper packaging. It's as easy as grabbing eggs in a cardboard container. And that's all in one trip to the grocery store, which, if we're being honest, you were planning to go to anyway. But paper isn't just an easy choice. Papertarians know that it's the smart choice, too. Because paper comes from trees, a renewable and sustainably managed resource. And paper products are designed to be recycled. In fact, when you choose products that come in paper-based packaging, those fibers can go on to be recycled up to 7 times. So why wouldn't you go Papertarian? I'll wait. Learn more at howlifeunfolds.com/papertarian.
I wanted to ask you about your virtual duet, I guess is probably the best way to phrase it, with Stan Getz. How did that come to be? What was the process of doing that? Because this wasn't like Natalie Cole singing with her father on Unforgettable. This was something totally new that I've really never heard of being done. Can you tell me more about it?
Yeah, it's actually more like a posthumous duet than a virtual, because, you know, Stan's not around anymore. And it's, in a way, it's I don't know if anyone's ever done this before. And I didn't know it could be done. I decided I wanted to write a song and I wanted Stan Getz to play my melody. Of course, he never would have ever played it because it didn't exist while he was alive. So how am I going to get Stan Getz to play my melody? Well, I'm going to have to use our fabulous technology that we have in 2021. And I'm going to have to grab notes and I'm going to have to take those notes that he plays with his sound and I'm going to have to change the notes. I'm going to have to change the notes and change the phrasing and put notes together that were never put together and make him basically play a melody that he's never played. And is it going to sound good or is it going to sound like a robotic choppy thing? And it turned out that it worked out really, really well. And I'm super proud of it. And I think it's innovative. I think it's, his family loves it. I played it for the Getz family. They love it. They all signed off on this literally and figuratively that they love this thing. All the money that will be generated from this song is going to the Stan Getz estate. So I would never profit from any of this, but I just think it's, and also it's nice for me to be able to share my fan base with somebody's estate that a lot of people don't know Stan Getz, yeah. But hopefully they will and they'll like it enough and maybe they'll go and support the whole thing by buying some of Stan Getz's records, which would be great. So it's kind of cool. It's innovative. I'm sure the jazz critics are going to absolutely hate it. I'm sure they will, because it's very presumptuous of me to take Stan Getz and basically bring him into my world. And they're going to think that was probably very, very uncool. And I think it's just the opposite of that.
I'm sure if you could go to his world, you would. But I think it's so innovative and so interesting. And as you said, I hadn't even thought of that about you know, turning people who are maybe dipping their toe into jazz but don't really know where to start to turn them on to some great names like that. Who are some other people that you would recommend that maybe, you know, want to get into jazz but don't really know where to start? Who should they check out?
Well, Stan Getz for sure. There's a record called Getz for Lovers. You get that book, that record, Getz for Lovers. And even if you're not a Stan Getz fan and you don't know much about it, if you like a beautiful saxophone, because he had a sound that was different than anybody else's sax sound. His nickname was The Sound, you know? And there's a quote from John Coltrane that says something like, about Stan Getz, he says something like, we'd all play like that if we could. That's John Coltrane talking about Stan Getz. So Stan is just beautiful in his... And it's just his phrasing and everything. It's just a unique sound. He's great. Paul Desmond is great. He's got a beautiful light touch. Cannonball Adderley is one of my favorite. He can get busy. He's probably my favorite alto sax player, but he plays a bossa nova called Quiet Nights that I think is just one of the greatest performances I've ever heard. It's complicated and fast, but you don't feel it. You just feel it being awesome. And yeah, there's a good start right there. Those three would be great. Dexter Gordon has some beautiful jazz ballads out there. You can also just listen to some piano jazz from Bill Evans. He's great. So that would be a good start.
I love the stuff Getz did with Gilberto.
Oh, man.
Yeah, because Getz was the one that made the bossa nova world famous. I mean, he brought bossa nova to the world stage. What happened was that I was talking to Stan's widow, Monica, and she was telling me how it all happened, that the government, the U.S. government, had brought these Brazilian musicians into the United States to, I don't know, it's like a sharing program. It had nothing to do with Stan Getz. It just brought him in. And then I guess his wife, Monica, heard this and said, you know, you should do something with these Brazilian players. And I guess they got together and Stan wasn't all that excited about it. She convinced him that this was good to do. And she spearheaded the whole record that won Record of the Year and Song of the Year in 1964 at the Grammys. And I understand that Stan's contemporaries, people like Miles, I'm not sure if it was actually Miles, but people like that, the contemporaries, were giving Stan a really bad time about doing these bossa novas, like, you've gone commercial, you've turned your back on jazz. Geez, some of the things that I hear today about my music, so that's why it doesn't bother me anyway. But so Stan did not go to the Grammys to accept the Grammy, and his wife accepted it on his behalf. And it was his most famous record. It really spearheaded his career into a new stratosphere. And it was all because his wife really saw the vision and said, you know, no, this is really going to be okay. And she convinced him to do it. And again, he was fighting the jazz purists that were saying this really isn't a good thing to do. And obviously, in hindsight, as we look back, some of those ballads, jazz ballads, I mean, the bossa novas that Stan Getz did, they're some of the most beloved jazz songs. And now I think there's not one jazz purist that probably would criticize that. So there you go.
Oh my God, I didn't know that. That's an incredible story for anyone who hasn't heard that. Please check that record out. It is unbelievable. I mean, Stan Getz, he's the sound. Brings me to a question about your sound. I mean, I've heard your sound referred to as so many things: R&B, adult contemporary, the famous smooth jazz tag, which seems like if it was invented for you, if not for Grover Washington Jr. How do you categorize your sound? What do you call it? Or do you not even think in those terms? Yeah.
No. There, I don't categorize it at all. I mean, I'm lucky that, you know, and people say this to me, you know, I just hear a few notes and they know it's my saxophone sound. I mean, that's a blessing. That's a gift. That's a phenomenon. I don't know. You know, it just is. It's one of those things. Whatever happens when I put that sax in my mouth, however the air flows out of my body, however my mouth is on there, there's a sound that comes out of my sax that sounds different, and that's it. That's the sound.
I mean, it's one of the most identifiable sounds in music. I mean, you've been successful in pretty much every metric a musician could be successful, which is astonishing because, I mean, jazz isn't traditionally seen as a mainstream genre. I mean, I wish it was, but I feel like that's probably the case. It's not, I feel like your career couldn't be something that could be cooked up in, you know, with a bunch of industry suits. Like, it's just such a naturally occurring phenomenon. What is it about your music that resonates with people across the globe?
Well, how would I answer that question? That's
fair.
A good question. But I mean, you know, it's, when people watch the documentary, you'll see how all this kind of happened with a very important performance on the Johnny Carson show in the mid-80s, where people heard my sound for the first time on a national level. And so that was a big deal back then. You know, why does my music resonate with people? I don't know. It's one of those things. It's like, why do you fall in love with somebody? Why does one person think that somebody's beautiful and somebody else thinks that somebody else is beautiful? It's just one of those things. It's a heart touches a heart in a certain way. And I'm very lucky that what comes out of my heart, which is sincere and organic and natural and beloved to me, seems to touch other people's hearts in that same way. And it's one of those beautiful things that makes life really exciting because it's an unknown that can't be quantified.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Kenny, I would talk to you all day. I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but it has been an absolute joy speaking to you. Thank you so much for your time today. And more importantly, thank you for your music. It has been really such a pleasure. Thank you.
My pleasure. I appreciate everything. Thanks for the kind words at the beginning.
Oh my goodness. Of course.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Inside the Studio, a production of iHeartRadio. For more episodes of Inside the Studio or other fantastic shows, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Awards Watch says Liam Neeson is at his best. Don't miss In the Land of Saints and Sinners. Having left his dark past behind, retired hitman Finbar Murphy, played by Neeson, leads a quiet life in a remote coastal Irish town. But when a menacing crew of terrorists arrive, Finbar is drawn into a vicious game of cat and mouse, forcing him to choose between exposing his secret identity or defending his friends and neighbors. In the Land of Saints and Sinners, from Samuel Goldwyn Films and Sony Pictures Home Entertainment. Watch it now on digital. Rated R.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.